To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio. To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Amanda.
So tonight we're here with the DSA campaign for the PRO Act and to win a Green New Deal. Our guests this evening are Holly Oakes Miller and Ted Bryan. Both are union organizers. Holly, a rank and file activist from Portland Community College Federation of Faculty and Academic Professionals, and Ted's a union organizer with the Public Sector Workers for the City of Portland. Holly and Ted are also active in the DSA, which is the Democratic Socialists of America. Holly's in Salem and Ted in Portland. Welcome, Holly and Ted.
Hello.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We're glad you're here too. Let's start out by picking apart the title of this DSA campaign. It's the priority campaign for the Democratic Socialists of America over the next few months and maybe beyond. It is a campaign to pressure Congress to pass a major change in labor law, the PRO Act, protecting the right to organize and win a Green New Deal. It's a joint campaign of the Democratic Socialist Labor Commission and the DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group. The slogan is Workers and the World Unite.
So in an elevator speech, what does the PRO Act accomplish and what does it have to do with a Green New Deal?
So the PRO Act, it stands for the Protecting the Right to Organize Act. It amends existing U.S. labor law to make it easier for workers to form unions, and it strengthens unions once they are formed by removing legal restrictions that have been placed on labor throughout the years. And it also boosts the enforcement of labor law so that there are real economic consequences and potentially even like civil consequences for employers who are committing unfair labor practices. So it's a really comprehensive set of reforms to the National Labor Relations Act and the Taft-Hartley Act. And it's really exciting. And if you look at like the era of the original New Deal, you know, we had all these militant labor struggles, in many cases led by socialists, communists, and anarchists, that led to the passage of the National Labor Relations Act and the rise in organized labor. And of course, that was a part of the New Deal. And so removing barriers to organizing now, it's part of what's needed to revitalize existing unions, build a militant labor movement that can fight for the social changes we need, like the Green New Deal.
So Holly, what does it have to do with the Green New Deal?
Well, it's essentially for DSA, it's the first step in a Green New Deal campaign. So without the ability to, have a really strong union-led working class, we won't be able to build the power that we need to win a Green New Deal. And so we see this as a key step.
Thanks, Holly. So give us some details of what the Taft-Hartley Act did and how the PRO Act reverses or repairs the Taft-Hartley Act.
So the Taft-Hartley Act essentially crippled the labor movement in the U.S. And in the world by empowering bosses to threaten and overpower workers who are seeking to just organize for basic human rights on the job.
You know, when was the Taft-Hartley Act passed?
It was 1947.
Okay. And the National Labor Relations Act was 1935, so this was like 12 years later.
So the PRO Act would undo many of the key policies of the Taft-Hartley, and it would help to contribute to unraveling its racist heritage. So among other things, it would end right-to-work laws in 27 states. It would limit employers' ability to classify workers as non-employees. It would prevent bosses from threatening to fire organizers and actually firing organizers. It would also limit their ability to interfere in union election processes, and it would permit workers to engage in things like secondary strikes and boycotts and prevent employers from permanently replacing striking workers. The secondary strikes part is really important because these are also known as indirect strikes. And so this is when a union goes on strike for in support of another union. And this is one of the best tools that workers have against capitalist bosses, because if we can shut down their stream of money, it takes away their power, essentially. And it was one of the reasons that the capitalists wanted to make it illegal, which they did when they enacted the Taft-Hartley Act.
And, go ahead, Ted.
So yeah, just to speak a little bit more to Taft-Hartley and sort of what came before it. So Jamie, you mentioned the National Labor Relations Act, that's 1935, right? And then there's this big upsurge in union organizing, and Taft-Hartley was passed in 47. And even before Taft-Hartley, there's this history, this very racist history of right to work legislation, which was started down south with this guy Vance Muse and the Christian American Association. It was basically a group of businessmen who were like rabidly racist, anti-Semitic, and anti-communist. And they saw this like politics of solidarity that was really working in organizations like the Communist Party, who were recruiting black workers down south, the Congress of Industrial Organizations. And so they basically came up with this strategy of right to work laws, which is about breaking, you know, closed union shops where every worker has to be a member of the union. And their strategy for doing this was really to pursue this divide and conquer strategy of saying, well, we don't want white workers to have to be forced into organizations with black workers and with Jewish communists and things like that. And so that was really picked up steam down south, and then it got enshrined nationally in the Taft-Hartley Act.
So you mentioned right to work. You also mentioned, Holly, you mentioned non-employees, what's that?
I think it's mainly referring to like freelance workers. And so it would give freelance workers the right to form unions, even though they're not technically employees. It would classify them as employees for the purpose of trying to form a union and organizing collectively with other freelancers.
And this is what they tried to do in California, correct, with the Uber drivers?
I think it's similar, but I think in California it actually reclassifies them as employees, and I don't believe that the PRO Act is going to do that. It's just going to classify them that way for the purpose of organizing, is the way that I understand it.
Which would be better, obviously.
Which would be better.
My understanding is it the law, it will presume that someone is an employee, and then there's a test that they call the ABC test to determine whether somebody is an independent contractor. And that makes it, that's a, the, currently there's like a sort of 10-point test that is used under the law. And so the ABC test is an easier way to determine if someone's an independent contractor. But basically what Holly said, it makes it easier for people to form unions as freelancers.
And you mentioned, Holly, that it prevents employers from firing people for union organizing. Well, doesn't the law prevent employers from firing people now for union organizing? How would this change that?
Well, so the law does give protections for workers organizing to form unions now, but there are several problems. One is that there's not much teeth in the law to actually enforce any violations when an employer fires somebody for trying to organize a union. And one thing, the current law actually, it explicitly states that for undocumented workers, if they get fired for organizing unions, even if it's proven that the employer has violated the law and retaliated against them for organizing, they are still not owed any sort of economic redress under the law. As in the current law, workers who have full citizenship status, if they are found to have been fired unlawfully, they can get back pay and be reinstated if there's a ruling in their favor. but undocumented workers get none of that protection. And the PRO Act actually changes that. So it explicitly puts in protections for undocumented workers. And it also allows for the National Labor Relations Board to impose economic penalties of up to $50,000 for unfair labor practice violations. So that's something that is not in the current law.
Which for a medium-sized employer would be significant.
Exactly. And even for a big employer like Amazon, if they're committing unfair labor practices in many different plants, as they do routinely, it $50,000 multiple times, that'll add up.
And as I understand it, the law puts the person back to work immediately. Now, when someone's fired for union organizing, they get their job back a year later. Mm-hmm. Right. They may get back pay, but the union organizing drive is gone by then.
Right.
You know, you fire the organizers and, you know, it goes away. So it's a cost of doing business currently. And this would, as you said, impose severe penalties and put people back to work immediately.
It would also allow workers to file civil suits against employers that violate the law, which is not something that people can do currently.
And what is this about permanently replacement? Stopping permanent replacement of strikers.
So right now, if folks are go out on strike, they can be fired for striking and then permanently replaced with other employees. And so this would basically make it illegal for that to happen. And so that would further incentivize, or if not incentivize, it would just allow people to go on strike more often, which is, of course, the source of labor's power, right? And so so that would, you know, the way the law is right now, it's basically to put fear into people so that you don't walk off the job. And the PRO Act would change that.
Right. And what did you say about elections, Holly, about union elections, that this would change?
It makes it so that the bosses can't interfere with the process.
And what do they do now?
Bosses would have to stay out of it, huh?
Right, exactly. Bosses tend to just be terrible when people are trying to form a union or trying to expand and bargain. This would stop them from doing that.
Yeah, they spend all of their money on the anti-union campaign and hiring these expensive lawyers instead of going with the union and paying a decent wage.
Well, and one of the things that happened with Taft-Hartley, right, is it brought in this idea that the employer somehow, there has to be some fairness to the employer in the unionizing process. And so employers are allowed, they are not allowed to retaliate against workers for trying to form a union, technically under the law, but they are allowed to hold captive audience meetings where they bring everyone together and they show them anti-union videos and they tell them, you know, we can really work out our problems in-house. We're a big family. We can solve our problems within the family. We don't need this third party, the union, and do all that kind of terrible stuff, which is exactly like what Amazon is doing right now in Bessemer with their union drive. And so the PRO Act would make it illegal for employers to hold captive audience meetings and basically say that they are not allowed to interfere in the process of employees voting for union recognition and representation.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Labor Radio, KBOO Portland. You're listening to Holly Oakes Miller and Ted Bryan of the Portland Democratic Socialists of America talking about the PRO Act and the Green New Deal. Wait, Holly, why don't you talk to us a little bit more about the what is the connection between winning the PRO Act and winning the Green New Deal?
Okay, so the PRO Act, I think I mentioned this before, it's essentially the first strategic step for DSA's long-term campaign for a Green New Deal. So once the PRO Act is passed, we're immediately going to begin to fight for a green public bailout and green jobs guarantee. The New Deal wasn't one big bill, so it was a series of victories, including things like the economic program that we know of as Social Security. They also, during that time, there was the first U.S.'s first major energy overhaul with the Rural Electrification Act that brought electricity to a lot of rural places that weren't getting it because capitalists couldn't make any money doing it. And some of those places still have public power to this day. And also the Civilian Conservation Corps, which has really stimulated the economy, and it was also regenerated ecosystems by providing good manual labor jobs for young people. And it helped to conserve resources on rural government-owned lands. So once we pass the PRO Act, this is going to like multiply the power of the organized working class, and that will help us to build the power that we need to pass Green New Deal type legislation for workers and for the planet. And so what we hope is that by fighting for and winning the PRO Act, that sets the stage for the workers and the world to be united. And because the reality is we have a whole world to win.
So polls have shown that 2/3 of American workers would join a union if they could, yet only 10% enjoy union protection. These statistics alone show how labor law is stacked against unionizing. The Democratic Party has promised with each administration from Carter to Clinton to Obama to make labor law reform a priority. But every time, even with Democratic majorities in Congress and the presidency, no major reforms have passed. Why is this happening?
Well, there are many reasons. I think that the bottom line is that if you look at what happened under the Obama administration with the EFCA Act, I'm blanking on what that stands for.
Employee Free Choice Act, allowing workers to sign cards when 50% plus one of workers in a workplace sign a card, they have a union. They don't have to go to an election. Free Choice Act.
Employee Free Choice Act. Thank you, Jamie. It was, you know, it was basically promised as this is going to be a priority for us, and then it just got dropped. And so what we need to do now, I mean, Biden has come out. He said that he wants to be the most pro-union president that there's ever been. You know, he said that this is a priority for him, and really it's on us to make sure that we put the pressure on Senate Democrats, and not just Senate Democrats, but also Senate Republicans, to really sort of say, which side are you on? Are you on the side of corporations, or are you on the side of workers? If there's not pressure from below, there's no incentive for them to make this a priority. And so it's on us to build that steam up under them.
Well, why wouldn't they make it a priority? Don't they represent working people?
I think you know the answer to that, Jamie.
Well, you're the socialist. Give us the answers.
The National Democratic Party and its leaders are essentially just beholden to, you know, the billionaire class, Wall Street, corporate bigwigs, and all of those people stand to lose money and power if workers were able to unionize on a massive scale. And so since all of these political leaders are beholden to the capitalist class, they don't have any political will to do anything other than maintain the status quo. And we see what happens with the status quo. Right, the wealth and income equality, it just keeps widening and widening as we watch the health and wealth of our people and planet decline. So,
and this is even more true in this time during the COVID pandemic. We've seen how much the corporations are bailed out versus how much the working class is being bailed out. So, you know, these kinds of protections are super important at this time.
So in the 30s, there was a massive strike, general strikes in several cities in 1934, a huge East Coast textile worker strike, 400,000 textile workers. That moved Congress to pass the National Labor Relations Act in 1935, which actually helped to regulate strikes. But the National Labor Relations Act did give rise to a much larger strike wave and organizing wave. So which comes first, the strikes or the labor law reform?
I think it's pretty clear that strikes came first. So back then it took the movements of radical leftists and militant trade unionists to win the reforms that ultimately led to the passing of the National Labor Relations Act.
Any other thoughts about that, Ted?
Well, yeah, I think it's, I mean, even going further back than the 30s, you know, with the looking at like the struggle for the 8-hour day and things like that that were going on in the late 19th century, it's pretty clear when you look at labor history that what comes first is the organizing and people being willing to stand with each other, take action, both like on the shop floor and outside of it to really create change. And that's when, you know, the reason we had the Wagner Act, the National Labor Relations Act, is because, you know, it was disrupting the economy to have these kinds of labor actions. And so FDR knew that he had to do something to basically smooth things over. So, and I think we're in a very similar situation now where, you know, the having laws that make it easier for workers to form unions and organize, that's clearly important. So it's not like we can only have strikes and militant activity, but we're in a situation now where in order to actually win some of the legal protections that we need and expand them, we're going to have to fight for them again. And certainly to win a Green New Deal, where we have even more entrenched interests in maintaining the status quo that is killing the planet, that's we're really going to have to fight for that.
Yeah, we will. And in our current political climate, where we flop back and forth between administrations on either, you know, starving the workers or patting them on the back, but never really giving them what they need, it's even more important for organizations such as the DSA to get on board to really drive these issues as opposed to letting the Democrats and the Republicans do it. So the national union movement led by the painters and communication workers unions is all in on promoting the PRO Act, but not necessarily the Green New Deal. How does DSA hope or expect to merge its agenda with that of the AFL-CIO?
I think this really is a great question, and it's one that I think a lot of us people in DSA are struggling with. So I would say that it's by building solidarity between the labor movement and the climate movement. So we have to struggle together to solve the climate and economic crises, because we already know that our political leaders are not going to do it. They don't have the political will to do it. They're in the pockets of billionaires. And both of these crises are literally killing the working class and destroying our planetary systems. And we need those planetary systems to survive. Like, we don't have them, we're not here. And so, like, some example, a really good example came out in an article recently. There are 10 million people a year that are dying from air pollution. This air pollution is coming from our industrial and agricultural complexes. And we know that climate chaos is projected to kill millions more people if we can't stabilize the climate system in the next decade or so. And this is by the best science from the latest report of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And as a scientist, I can say that no other body of science has ever been done on any scientific topic as much work as this has been done on the climate. So it's not that we don't know what's going on. We know exactly what's going on. But the capitalists, you know, have effectively, for decades, they've pitted the climate movement against the labor movement and jobs. And in reality, these movements have more in common than we've been led to believe. So they tend to give us this false choice that we can stabilize jobs today, or we can work tackle climate chaos for tomorrow, but we can't do these things simultaneously. And we at DSA don't believe that. We believe that policies for better workplaces and for a better world are one and the same, and that the Green New Deal is a better deal for workers and for the planet. So together we can transform workplaces and the world, knowing one can't thrive without the other.
And I'd just like to add on to that. I think Holly did a great job of breaking it down there, but you know, if you look at 2020 and, you know, the biggest political event that we had, right, was the uprisings all around the country in response to the murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all the police violence that folks are experiencing in the Black community. I think we have to be very clear that the movement for a Green New Deal against climate change and the labor movement, these are movements that are they're definitely essentially interwoven with the movement for racial justice, you know. And in response to the uprisings, you've seen corporations and everyone is saying, well, yes, of course we're on board with diversity and equity and inclusion and things like that. And you see people with Black Lives Matter signs all over. But if you really want to make a commitment to the health and well-being of Black and brown people, these are people who are impacted first and worst by the climate crisis, both here in this country and around the world, like in the global South. And fighting against climate change is fighting for racial justice. Fighting for the labor movement is fighting for racial justice. And if you really want to put your money where your mouth is and do something that's going to actually help Black and brown people, then getting on board with the Green New Deal, getting on board with the PRO Act, and removing barriers to organizing is the way to do it.
That is really where it's at, I think, is that we have to start from the ground up or we're never going to get anywhere.
So the PRO Act passed the House last week, and the president has urged its passage in the Senate, but not all Democratic senators are on board, and the filibuster allows the Republicans to force a supermajority of 60% to pass any legislation. So what is the path to victory here?
We got to hold their feet to the fire. The question is just, which side are you on? Are you on the side of working people, or are you on the side of the corporations? And, you know, I think both the Democrats and the Republicans, they do a different kind of song and dance, but they're both trying to claim that they're the ones who are really on the side of, you know, working people in this country. Neither of them are. And I think we just have to say, well, if you really are, then supporting the PRO Act is the way to put your money where your mouth is. And what we're doing in DSA is we are organizing phone banks to phone bank voters in key states where their senators do not yet support the PRO Act, and to basically put pressure from below by contacting their constituency and educating people about how important this piece of legislation is.
Can you tell us how we can get involved in those actions?
The easiest way to do it is to go to DSA's website on the PRO Act. It's pro-act.dsausa.org. And there you can sign up for a phone bank shift. The phone banks are going to start this Sunday, the 21st. And they're going to continue until the beginning of April, I believe. And there's also a form you can fill out if you're interested in being involved with more organizing going forward. But that would be the best way to get plugged in and to stay involved.
Are we having any local actions otherwise?
Yes. There is a local regional eco-socialist group, and it's mostly Portland eco-socialists and Salem eco-socialists. And we are planning a live stream PRO Act teach-in, probably for sometime, hopefully in early April. And then we will also be working with National, because National plans a nationwide event on May 1st for International Workers' Day. And so this is a big opportunity for us to unite socialists and workers and climate activists and immigrants for one big day of action on the PRO Act.
And is there a local website that our listeners can find out about local activities?
There is in Salem.
Well, tell us both of them.
You can contact me through our Salem DSA website. And so that is salemdsa.org. And I'll be happy to get you plugged into the campaign. You'll see right on our main website page that you can sign up for the National Phone Bank right there. And then I can help get you plugged in locally.
And if you search for Portland DSA Labor Working Group, in Google, you'll find our homepage, and you can fill out an interest form there to get plugged in on our contact sheet. And there's also you can email portlanddsalabor@gmail.com, and say that you're interested in getting involved with the PRO Act organizing, and then we will get in touch with you.
That wraps it up for this week's Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. You've been listening to KBOO, and our guests tonight were Holly Oakes Miller and Ted Bryan from the Portland Democratic Socialists of America. I'm Jamie Partridge with my co-host Amanda Hill. Stay tuned.